We're talking hunger across South Florida. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Hunger is a bigger problem than most of us may want to believe. The fact is, according to the nonprofit Feeding America, about 1 in 10 people in our region are food insecure. We'll take a closer look at the need here. Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava has finished her first year on the job. In that time, she's dealt with COVID peaks, the Surfside Tower collapse, and unrest in the Caribbean. The mayor joins us today to catch up on the latest. Finally, families are coming together for the holidays, which also means possibly uncomfortable COVID conversations. Today, a few tips from an expert on etiquette before Thanksgiving. All of that today on Sundial after the news. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, as you shop for the ingredients for your Thanksgiving meal this week, you might drop something in a food donation box or drop off an extra box of stuffing at a food pantry for someone in need. It's the week that a lot of us are thinking about that, but what about after this week? The food bank Feeding South Florida estimates there are more than 705,000 people experiencing food insecurity in our region. Picture it this way. Fill up Hard Rock Stadium 10 times over. That's how many people are food insecure in South Florida. Donating food helps, but what can we do as a collective to try to change that forever? Sari Vatsky is the Vice President of Feeding South Florida. She joins us now. Sari, great to have you back on the program.
Thank you so much for having us.
You know, who are we serving? Who are the people right now who are coming in for help?
You know, the face of hunger might really surprise you. It's anyone from kids to older adults to single parent households to, two parent households, people that are working but are underemployed. The reality is that right here in South Florida, about 1 in 9 people are food insecure. And the thing is, you know, you can't see hunger, you can't feel it. So it's hard to know who's experiencing it.
And how has it changed over this past year and a half with the pandemic?
You know, we've definitely seen the need thrust into the spotlight, unfortunately. Prior to COVID, we were serving about 700,000 food insecure individuals. And at the height of the pandemic, we were serving about 1.6 million. And right now we're serving about a million people in need of assistance. So, the need continues to be at an increased rate. We've seen it slow down from the height of the pandemic, but there's still, people who need support.
And look, you've been touching on it just a little bit here and there, but we say it often, but let's define it. Let's clearly define what is food insecurity.
Great question. And, you know, when we try not to say hunger, because hunger is a temporary state of being. So if you or I, you know, skip breakfast, we're going to be hungry by lunch. And food insecurity is a chronic state of not knowing where you're going to get your next meal. It's you have an empty refrigerator. You cannot go to the grocery store. You can't just pull up to a restaurant. People that are dealing with coping mechanisms and making trade-offs. It's parents that are forgoing meals so that their children could eat instead.
You know, when we talk about donations, people, you know, as right now, as they're probably getting some of the food ready for this upcoming holiday, they may see that bin and say, hey, you know, I could donate some cans. I could do this. I could do that. Is there usually a certain type of food that you're looking for? What to tell folks, what is the best kind of donation to make?
During the holidays, people definitely want the staples, but throughout the year, it's the tried and true peanut butter, pasta, canned goods, meals, pasta sauce. And we try to make sure that families have immediate access to nutritious food. So if it's quinoa, if it's brown rice, you know, we really want to make sure that people aren't just eating, but that they're eating well and healthy.
And so what are some of the things that you should not be donating?
We definitely cannot take items that are made from home. We cannot take items that have been opened. We do try to avoid things like sweets and candy and chips and desserts. Definitely wholesome food that can provide the components of a meal, protein, carbohydrates, fruits, vegetables.
Again, talking with Sari Vatsky, the Executive Vice President at Feeding South Florida. The food bank serves Palm Beach down to Monroe counties, and you can find more about what they need right now on our social media, WLRN Sundial. This, you know, Sari, this is the second Thanksgiving during the pandemic. And, you know, this time last year, we were dealing with a lot more job loss, more families experiencing that food insecurity. But supposedly things are starting to get better. But I don't know, what are you seeing when it comes to need? Are things getting better?
You know, we live in a tale of two cities here in South Florida. We're fortunate to experience some of the wealthiest and most beautiful zip codes in the country. But the reality is that we also experience some of the poorest in the country. And, you know, there's just a disparity between those who have and those who have not. And people, you know, during the pandemic, you know, maxed out their credit cards, they plowed through savings. And so, you know, still living paycheck to paycheck with people just one emergency away from needing support. We are seeing that the reality is that people are in need of assistance. And, you know, we look at jobs and yes, there's jobs that are available, but, you know, there's a skills gap between the jobs that are available and the people looking for work. So that's why, in addition to providing immediate access to nutritious food, Feeding South Florida has launched workforce training programs. And we have a warehouse training program, a culinary training program. You know, for us, it's about breaking the cycle of hunger and poverty and addressing the root causes.
And, you know, we talk about donations. The other thing, too, is I know I've done this and people have asked me, you know, what about volunteering? And yeah, a lot of people want to volunteer during the holidays, and that's wonderful. But really, you know, the need is there throughout the year. But what about when people ask you that question? How do you approach it?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because we do want to share that, you know, although we appreciate everyone's, you know, support and heart during this time of year, there are 364 other days that families are in need. And we especially see the need for support come January, when it's after the holidays, people have gone back to work, and there's a dip in volunteers. So we always need support throughout the entire year. In January, especially heading into the summer, that's really when families are in need of most assistance, when kids aren't in school, they don't have access to free or reduced meals. The cost of daycare increases. The cost of cooling a home increases. So there's definitely volunteer opportunities throughout the entire year.
You know, with this pandemic, one of the challenges that we see is the supply chains across the country have been disrupted, and that's causing a lot of challenge for folks just to get basic goods. Or even, again, some of the things they'd like to have. But I'm wondering if that has impacted the food banks in their ability to get whatever supplies they need. Has that been the case?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. We placed an order for about 8,000 turkeys in September. And just last week, we received a call that we weren't going to get any of them. So the price that we had paid in September was about $1.09 a pound. And we had to bring in turkeys from Canada, from Texas, from Atlanta at almost double the price at $1.90 a pound. So we've definitely experienced that. But, you know, for us, it's about doing whatever we can to make sure that families have a happy Thanksgiving.
The whole order that you had was canceled out? They couldn't deliver them?
It sure was.
Where were they coming from?
You know, it's uncertain. Thankfully they were able to later, you know, find some, and they, you know, were able to help support monetarily, but, you know, that increased cost and, you know, we've all seen the cost of gas. So it was kind of a double whammy for us, you know, having to pay more for turkeys and then for us to deliver them, you know, the increased cost of gas is really where we've needed the community support more than ever this year.
Sabri, what are you most thankful for this year?
Gosh, I am so thankful for the community that we live in and the generous spirit that everyone displays. Seeing everyone come together and around a common cause, it's really heartening to see people believe still in the spirit of each other. You know, seeing the team work incredibly hard to make sure that the people have a happy holiday, it's inspiring and motivating.
Sari, thank you so much for all that you do for the community. Really appreciate it, and always a pleasure to have you on to remind folks of what all of us can do to help.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure being on, and we appreciate everyone's support, including WLRN's.
Sari Vatsky, the Executive Vice President at Feeding South Florida. Learn more about what they need, what's coming up for the holidays, and as we've said, there's many other days besides the holidays where need is there. Thanks again, Sari. Again, find us at on our social media, WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, we're going to chat with Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava about COVID, climate change, and her first year on the job. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Daniela Levine-Cava became the first Democrat in 20 years to become mayor of Miami-Dade County. A year into her term, she's already faced a slew of challenges, from the pandemic to the Surfside tragedy to the unrest in Cuba and Haiti, which, of course, remember, we've got a massive diaspora of both of those countries here in South Florida. We're joined now by Mayor Levine-Cava to catch up on all of that. And if you have a question for her, text us, 786-677-0767. Again, that's 786-677-0767. Mayor Levine-Cava, it's always a pleasure. I wanted to start with this. You were with School Superintendent Alberto Carvalho yesterday. You were talking about the COVID vaccine rollout for kids. What is the county's role working with the schools to get more shots in kids' arms?
Well, thank you so much for the question, and great to be with you as always. Look, I feel that it is the county's responsibility to do everything we can to defeat this disease, to get people inoculated, protect them, their health, their safety. So, of course, wanting to reach out and help the school system, we offered to be on site with our contracted provider, which is NOMI. And so at 40 plus schools, we are providing the vaccination team.
What are you hearing from parents? Look, the vaccines are it's controversial all over the country. And there's a lot of fights about, you know, getting vaxxed and not. But what are you hearing from parents? Are they interested in making sure their kids are vaccinated now that all kids 5 and up?
Yeah. Sure. Well, we've had about 1,500 in the first week or so of the program get vaccinated at county or county supported sites. That is obviously a small step towards the percentage we'd like to see vaccinated. But we do know that those who recognize the importance of vaccines recognize that children also need to be safe, and that children can be vectors. They can carry the disease to others. So some think, oh, children, we want to be more cautious. But definitely the trials have demonstrated the vaccine is safe. It's a much smaller dose. And many of the parents that I've spoken to were there first thing, eager. My own grandchildren are 2 and 4, and they are enrolled in a trial. So, on my side of the family, we're very excited to promote vaccines for children.
Now, there are a lot of things that I want to get to with you, so I'm going to be bouncing around here on topics. Let's move over to this national story, but it's going to affect us. It's the infrastructure deal that's coming from Congress. And I'm wondering, because you were at the White House last week for the bill signing, and I'm wondering, what does Miami-Dade need badly? What are you excited about with this?
Oh, yes. This is definitely a game changer. It's the largest infrastructure bill in at least a generation. And its aim is to modernize our system while creating good jobs. We've got bridges and roads. We have transit systems, all of those needing not just to be strengthened, but in some cases, stand up new systems. We've got broadband, environmental opportunities, make things more resilient. Many, many projects, wastewater projects. We are gearing up in across the board, and we've already had conversations with several of the federal agencies to learn more about their process and make sure that we are right at the starting gate.
And, you know, I mean, one of the things that many cities, but especially ours, has to deal with is the climate crisis. And, you know, you were at the White House for the infrastructure deal. You were in Glasgow for the big climate summit, the global climate summit. And yeah. While you were there, I'm wondering what world leaders and scientists ask about Miami, considering that we may be the canary in the coal mine. Everybody's looking at us.
Well, I have to tell you that I was so proud to be there. I got a lot of ideas from other mayors and some governors and some national leaders, as well as scientists and technology experts. But truthfully, Miami, while we are the center of the universe to us, a lot of other places are also really looking in the barrel of the shotgun, if you will. All the island nations that are going to be underwater quicker than others. But I felt there was a real solidarity. What I felt about this was unity across the globe, recognizing that we all share this planet. There is no planet B, and we all have to work together to get it right.
What came from the summit, though, that you bring here? What do you want to bring here to help us move forward on this issue?
Yeah, we already have our climate change strategy that I launched just before going to Glasgow, and we have our sea level rise and our resilience 305. So we have a lot of plans. What I got from it was a focus on what we do at the local level really matters. That, you know, world leaders, they obviously have to be the ones negotiating major investments come to pass is through actions at the local level. So what we do here really matters for reducing our carbon footprint, whether it's our Building 305 program to reduce carbon through the buildings that are actually the second largest source of carbon. It's the electrification of our fleet, the solarizing our rooftops, and so on. So what we do contributes that way, and also what we do in terms of adaptation, how we build, how we accommodate water as the waters rise and we have more extreme weather. So that we have to work on these multi-levels, and what happens at the local community is really essential and to the future.
You talk about that plan, and something we had mentioned on the program before you went off to Glasgow is that there were issues with the plan, that there were people saying, look, reaching any of the goals by 2030 or 2050, which 2050 is we'd have zero emissions, that according to that plan, you may not reach those goals. Do we have to rethink our plan?
So we are doing everything we can in terms of county policy for county buildings, county programs. We have to work with the private sector. We have to engage them as part of the solution. And there are a lot of market-driven strategies. One of my takeaways from Glasgow was the extent to which the corporate world is on board, that it's not about the quarterly earnings statement so much. It's about resilience and sustainability of businesses. So more and more businesses are finding ways to themselves contribute to the reduction of carbon and the climate, keeping the climate down to 1.5 degrees Celsius, no more than that. And that gives me great hope. There's also a lot of technology out there. So we have to do our part. We have to reinvent how we live day to day, build smarter, consume less, et cetera. But we also know that there are thousands and thousands of people creatively coming up with solutions that we can adapt.
Again, we're talking with Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava. Recently reached her first full year as mayor of the county. And we are talking about some of the big challenges that she's facing that first year. And of course, we'll talk about what challenges will come, what her goals are for the future. And again, if you have a question for her, you can text us 786-677-0767. We did get one listener comment via Twitter. Ian wants to know, Mayor, your thoughts on the city of Miami voting to ban electric scooters. Mayor Francis Suarez wants to revisit this, but throughout the county, I mean, looks, a lot of different cities are dealing with this issue. It's a way a lot of people get around, but there is controversy around them as well. I don't know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so they definitely are convenient, and they are a great last mile solution, certainly for urban dwellers, but they have created new problems. They are in the way of pedestrians. They might be putting pedestrians at risk. Sometimes people are not driving responsibly. So I think it's calling out for a kind of more balanced approach, something where we look at how we share our roads and sidewalks and make sure that we can do this in a way that maximizes the benefit but doesn't create hazards.
As I mentioned, you've been on the job now for a year, and you think about everything that's happened in that year. I mean, COVID, the Delta variant, the Surfside tragedy. You had issues in Cuba and Haiti, which affects us. That's a local story, even though it's international. For us, it's local. What do you think about most about this past year?
Oh, goodness. Well, COVID is certainly the great unifying theme. We're now 2 years in, and I've been very active in helping our community to cope with this from a health and economic perspective. I do feel very good about our community's response. I think we've done a great job getting people to accept the vaccine, take the vaccine, to take precautions. Our economy is definitely on the rebound, and we're at the lowest positivity that we've been since the beginning of the pandemic. And we have the highest vaccination rate in the entire state of Florida and above the national average. So I have to say that that's a constant. Surfside was the unimaginable that we never could have anticipated, but it also showcased the extent to which we are prepared for disasters here. We have a great Office of Emergency Management, our police and our fire, first rate, and we work so well together with the cities, the state, the national government. So I think we want to really learn from that, because we know there'll be other challenges that come our way, as well as what we do now to make sure people's buildings are safe with what we're learning. So those are two really critical things that are always on my mind. But looking ahead, and the reason why I was elected was to make sure that our community can thrive, even with the environmental challenges, the economic divides. These are things that drive me, have driven me my whole career.
And
equity and environment, engagement, and economy. Those are my four E's, my foundations.
And you talk about the economy. You mentioned twice there. I'm wondering, you know, look, we still have some COVID money from the federal government, but when that's run out, are you confident that the economy's stable now? We get back on our feet?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're driven by property taxes to a large extent, right? We don't have a state income tax here, which also is drawing people here. We have a lot of relocation businesses. People can work from anywhere, live wherever they want, work from anywhere. So we have really benefited from other communities' losses in this pandemic. We are seeing construction still underway. We believe that the economy is on the rebound, including property taxes will be available through all of those expansions. And we think that on the other side of the American Rescue Plan and the infrastructure bill, that we have the population and the dollars to sustain our growth.
You know, in all the time I've known you, I take you as a very optimistic person. But, you know, realistically, look, there's always regrets. And I'm wondering if in this first year, anything that we've talked about or anything else that I haven't mentioned, is there a regret? Is there something you look at and wish it had been done differently or we had fixed it better?
Well, I think as a new mayor, I have had to establish relationships in a new way. And it's not a regret, but it's a work in progress. I think that people see that a woman can lead. You don't have to be a man to be the commander in chief, the sheriff, the incident commander, and to handle all that this almost 3 million person county needs with a $9 billion budget. Working across 34 municipalities, obviously the state and the federal government. So I view myself as collaborator in chief, and it's definitely a work in progress. And I feel going into year two that I'll be able to help reap rewards of working hard this year to establish strong relationships.
Mayor, I find it really sad if we haven't gotten to the point where we can accept that, yes, a woman absolutely can run things as well as anybody else. So, but let me ask you this as we finish up here, moving on to what's happening over in Miami Beach, because we've had the mayor on our show before about this. A lot of changes. They're trying to basically change business. They're trying to change the brand of Miami Beach. I wonder what you think about that, you know, especially the entertainment district and trying to find a new clientele.
Yeah. Well, Miami Beach is actually our major draw. When people say Miami, and of course we want them to know it's Miami-Dade County, the brand is so much also Miami Beach, right? It's just a mecca.
But every time they have a Dolphins game on, even though the stadium is way far away, they show pictures of Miami Beach.
Yes, I've heard that Formula One will be panning pictures of the beach when they're here. I think that's very fair, for sure. That's the world, that's what's so iconic. That to be said, I think especially during the pandemic when travel was down, prices were rock bottom, and definitely things got a little rowdier than they had been. So I think that's trying to kind of recover that Miami Beach is a world-class destination, that a range of people can come here and that people can be safe.
But do you think, because it seems like, and I've asked Mayor Gelber about this, do you want to get rid of, the spring break crowd? Is that what you're trying to do and find a new clientele? And to an extent they do.
Yeah, but remember, it wasn't just spring break. We had, spring break was virtual, college was virtual. People were not coming only because they were college students on spring break. They were coming because they could come, because we were open, and because the weather was and the setting was great. So I think I'm not about police is the solution to everything. And our director of police, Freddie Ramirez, spoke to the Miami Beach Commission very clearly on this point. We need to obviously have alternatives, options. We need to activities. We need to have a mix of clientele. I'm not in favor of eliminating business, but I do think that as we recover, we're going to be pulling in a bigger mix. Prices will go up and some of the activities will change.
Let me finish with this. What are your three biggest goals for your second year?
Yes. Well, we certainly are going to double down on our promises to continue equity, environment, and economy. So on the equity front, we've been working really hard to make sure that neighborhoods left behind do not get further behind as we recover from the pandemic. And my Office of Equity and Inclusion has been very active on procurement issues and employment issues, apprenticeships. We're helping small businesses, investing in capacity building for small businesses. On the economy side, we're gonna combine environment with economy. We're gonna continue to focus on blue-green economy to see, can't we be at the centerpiece of not just growing our economy, but growing in a way that is really about resilience. And on the, we have to focus on our transit, definitely. We're gonna get that money from the federal government to build our transit lines. And we need to get a handle on housing. Clearly the housing market is something that is really our Achilles heel. We've got $260 million allocated in this year's budget. We've got tens of thousands of units online. We have to work really, really hard so that people can afford to live here and we can follow the priorities that came out from my Thrive 305, my largest ever engagement initiative in Miami-Dade County history.
Well, here's hoping that this upcoming year we don't deal with a lot of the stress and tragedy that we did, and we have the opportunity to do a lot of the things that we hope to do. Mayor, always a pleasure. I really appreciate it, and I hope that you and your family have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, Lewis. Appreciate you very much.
Again, Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine-Cava. And, we heard from some of you, and you can always join the conversation. Do so just by texting us. Join the Sundial Text Club. Text us now the word hello to 786-677-0767. Because the other thing, too, is we can let you know through the text club when we're going to have these conversations. And that way you can always chime in, share your thoughts, share your questions, because we always love to share your questions with our leaders. Let's find out what they're thinking. Why not? 786-677-0767. Again, 786-677-0767. 800-273-0767. Well, still to come, what's the best way to host a peaceful Thanksgiving dinner? We'll try to give you some tips. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. It's that time of year when we come together as a family and we're thankful for everything that we have. But like any family gathering, uncomfortable conversations are going to happen. You know it. Joining us now to discuss how to navigate these topics that are bound to come up, Yvonne Salas, director of Etiqueta, I'm going to say this right, Etiqueta Excellence Manor School in South Florida. I had to practice that one. Yvonne, thank you and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. And you got that right. Etiqueta Excellence.
Thank you. I've got the etiquette. I just have to, practice saying it right. But, and by the way, I want to send out the number again. The text number is 786-677-0767. How are you going to handle Thanksgiving and the holidays this year? We'd love to hear your story. Because I remember last year, obviously with the pandemic, a lot of people were having very small gatherings or outdoors, again, limited to just a few people. I wondered if that's changed for folks. And obviously, if it's changed, how are you going to deal with these challenges? So text us again, what you're going to be doing. Yvonne, what do you fear most? I'm curious about family gatherings at the holidays.
Well, this year it's a little bit more relaxed than last year because of the fact that most of the population, at least 3/4 is the numbers that I have, are vaccinated. But there are still many considerations for this year's Thanksgiving celebration. So we're going to continue having smaller gatherings, scaled down family celebrations are going to be the norm. The groups pretty much determined by households or those that you're in contact with frequently, if not on a daily basis, which would be ideal. But what I am worried about is people still being too relaxed. So especially with people that are traveling from out of your community.
Yeah.
Because you not only have to worry about your actual family members, their vaccination status, or if they have young children or older adults, the grandparents and all that. But you also have to worry about community. Where are you coming from? Or where are you going? There are many states now that are having a resurgence of COVID.
Yeah.
So you have to worry about that also
And now we see international travel has increased as well. Let's talk about that. Let me start with the vaccines. And I'm wondering, what tips do you have for folks who are hosting family and or friends and they want to know the vaccine status of people? Can you ask that or how would you ask that?
Yes, yes. Now you can ask it. This is the wonderful thing about rules of etiquette. It's like language. It evolves and adapts to the needs. Before the pandemic, this would have been considered a nosy question. It's almost asking personal health issues. But nowadays, that has become accepted behavior because it's safety first. So it's perfectly okay to ask your guests for their vaccine history. Even if they have received the booster is a question that people are asking now because, the information we have is that as months go by, your immune reserves get depleted. So it's okay to ask if they have been vaccinated and if they have received the booster. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it's, the concern about the older adults.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I'll give you a scenario, and it's something in my family, and I know that, this is a lot of people share this story. There is someone in my family, they want to see, one member wants to see family. The other member is a little worried. like, okay, because we have a child with an issue here, and so we have to be very careful. And, you know, everybody in the family is vaccinated except the child. And so there's that concern. There's a concern. So how do you breach that topic and say, look, how do we find a way so that people can get together, but also make sure that, you know, the child is safe and people feel comfortable?
Yes, yes, I totally agree. You have to acknowledge the other person's concerns before you disagree, because that way you're showing respect and you're showing consideration for their anguish, which is valid, especially like you say, if you have a younger child with an issue. You have to respect people's decisions. So you could have hybrid celebrations. So you could have a small group that's going to meet in your house, but if there is a small group of family members, you can have them join at some point via Zoom, perhaps for, you know, when it's time for dessert or for a toast, and have them join, you know, FaceTime or with Zoom call or something like that, so that everybody feels that they're participating, but that they have been taking, their concerns have been taken into consideration. Yeah. That's the most important aspect of this whole thing, because remember that we are celebrating Thanksgiving, which is gratitude and it's acceptance. And so we have to put it into practice. It's not just a day, you know, generic Thanksgiving. So how are you giving thanks for your reality that you're living right now? And I think the appropriate thing is to find a way that everybody can feel comfortable and maybe have in person, some groups via Zoom, and everybody respecting each other's concerns.
Again, talking with Yvonne Salas, the director of Etiqueta. I got it. Etiqueta Excellence Manners School in South Florida. And again, talking about the holiday season. You know, we're talking about, you know, etiquette at not just at the table. It's etiquette when we're with our family and friends. And some of the challenges sometimes that you face when you get together for the holidays, because, you know, uncomfortable conversations come up. How do you deal with that? You know, talking about the vaccine or masks or anything like that, how do you approach these conversations and still keep some peace if possible? We'd love to hear from you, by the way. If your Thanksgiving, get-togethers are a little different this year than last year and how you're handling that, you can text us 786-677-0767 or find us on social media at WLRN Sundial, Twitter or Facebook. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on that. Yvonne, we talked about vaccines. What about masks? That's the other thing. Some people feel comfortable without them if they're in a gathering, a small enough gathering, but other people, not yet. How would you do it? How would you approach somebody about that?
Okay, well, the first thing is to try, and this is what I'm suggesting to everyone, outdoors if at all possible. Luckily, we're in South Florida, so weather permitting, we should plan to have, if not the entire celebration, at least part of it outdoors. If you're outdoors, the need for masks reduces. So it makes it more comfortable for everybody. If you're going to be indoors, try open windows and doors as frequently as possible, if not keeping them open at all times, because the advice from the experts is that if you have, you know, moving air flowing in and out, it reduces the risks and therefore reduces the need for masks. But once again here, if you have a family member that feels more comfortable, having the mask is another layer of protection. If that person feels more comfortable using the mask, let's be lenient and not question their reasoning. Accept it and have everybody react as normally as possible to everyone's different needs, because we don't know where people are coming from. Maybe they have lost, you know, a close family member or a close friend, or they have personal health issues that we might not even be aware of. So we have to be respectful of their needs.
And that's always a good point. Let's always remember that you don't know their story. You never know what, you know, where a person's coming from. And also great advice, just have it outdoors. By the way, check the weather. The rest of the week should be lovely in South Florida. So, you know, no excuse there. All right, so we go from vaccines and masks to the other topic that's always coming up during the holidays, religion and politics, which they told us never to talk about at the dinner table, but it's going to come up. You know, I wondered if you know how you handle, Yvonne, those kind of topics when they come up. What do you do?
Exactly. Well, you are right. The first advice is try to avoid those topics. But if you can't avoid them, then find something in common, if at all possible. So we always have some aspect of our point of view that we can agree on. Acknowledge, as I mentioned before, it's not only applicable to your health needs, but to any topic that could become confrontational, acknowledge the other person's point of view. Also, I always try to, when you're expressing your opinion, to say, I think, or I believe, you know, so that before you give a statement, it's not, you know, final thoughts and it's not the end, the final truth, but that you say, well, it's my opinion, that's what I think and I believe, and that makes the other person listening to you feel that they're not being confronted or questioned. It's just that we have different opinions, different beliefs, and try and find another topic. A person with good table etiquette will always try and change the conversation. When you see that it's going towards topics where people have very definite views and it can end up being uncomfortable, start talking about something else, as simple as that. Why don't you think if everybody gives us, you know, go around the table and ask people what they are thankful for, or how has this year improved compared to 2020? You know, things like that. Just change the topic as quickly as possible before it gets out of hand.
Well, I'm always going to lean on the one thing that I it's always been my go-to. Let's talk about how bad those dolphins are. Anyway, you know, I wanted to come back, Yvonne, to a mask before I forget. What do you do when you ask someone, even politely, to put on a mask and they refuse?
That's a very sensitive topic. And if you're in a situation where you can remove yourself from there, do so. If you're asking somebody to wear a mask and they refuse to, it depends on where you're at. But for instance, if you're in your house, that's why it's so important that we are upfront with our guests when we're inviting them. We have to be clear. You know, before the pandemic, we would try and always make sure that our guests knew, for instance, about our dress codes, what we expected them to wear to our party. Now we have to be very clear and upfront on how we expect them to behave at our gathering. So when you invite somebody, be clear. I'm going to be wearing a mask. I would appreciate it if you also wear it. If you don't feel comfortable wearing a mask, please let me know now. I can understand, but we will be wearing masks at the house. That type of information, you have to give it to your guests, and they have to comply because they are your guests.
I will say this, you know, when my abuela was alive, whenever she set the rules, nobody argued. You just never argued with Abuela. She put her foot down. That was the end of that. Again, you can contact us. Let us know what's going on for this holiday season. Maybe the fastest way, you can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And we've been hearing from some of you. Mayuli on Twitter says, I have a family member who refuses to get vaccinated. Instead of arguing, I've opted to not participate in family gatherings instead. I've asked for understanding and acceptance of this decision. Yvonne, that's a tough one. You know, when
that's a tough one. You're right.
How do you know, saying I can't participate if this is going to happen. How do you do it without hurting feelings?
Mm-hmm. This is very important. So I would leave open the opportunity to participate via Zoom or FaceTime so that the family members understand that you are not, you know, wanting to not be part of the family or not celebrate with the family, just that you have additional concerns that obviously they're not sharing. So I think being there at a distance, but respecting your own concerns, but sharing with the family. So send them a card ahead of time, make sure that they understand that you still love them, that you want to participate, but you don't want to be present because you have health concerns, and just be part of the family. What's important here is that this doesn't cause a rift in the relationships. So this is the same as we were talking before about politics and religion. Now we have to add health issues to the discussion. Yeah. So you would want to have different opinions, but still be part of the family, still be able to share, even at a distance. Look, the way we did it last year, we couldn't physically be present, but that didn't mean that we didn't participate as a family, share, you know, our love. So we have to continue doing this still.
And you know, even though we're starting to get together again, you know, I know that one of the other things people keep thinking about is touch. And, you know, when we see each other, there is that instinct, want to go up, give a hug, a handshake or something like that. And I'm wondering, you know, how to approach that if you are uncomfortable with it. People just automatically want to come up to you. How do you keep them at a distance and let them know, hey, don't take it the wrong way. I want to hug you too, but not yet. Not yet.
I think it hurts people's feelings. And it's also something that we have to get used to. I personally, at some points, I'm very physical. So my tendency is to go hug or kiss. And I have to control myself. And sometimes I have forgotten. And I have approached somebody and immediately I said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, you know, impose myself on you. But yes, the advice nowadays is still to keep your distance, you know, the fist pump or the namaste sign, you know, hand in the heart type of thing, unless it's a very close group, unless you are all vaccinated and it's family members that you are, you know, in touch with frequently. Otherwise, I would avoid the hug and the kiss. We'd still, you know, let's not exaggerate because we still have a long ways to go in terms of COVID. And like I mentioned, in some states, it's resurging. And
It definitely is. There is actually an NPR map out there so folks could see which states where things are starting to pick up again. Let me just finish with this, Yvonne. What are you most thankful for this year?
Oh, I'm most thankful for health, really. Because once again, 2021, we still are seeing the effects of COVID, so many deaths and so many people that have not fully recovered. So I'm very thankful for health, not only for my own health, but my family's health. And that's why I think it's so important that we continue to take all precautions that we can in order to, you know, get over this hump. We still have some ways to go. And now with the children starting to get vaccinated, things are going to improve, but still we have to take care of our health. It's the most valuable thing we have. And we're not aware of how important it is when we're healthy. But when we're not, we really are confronted with the reality that without health, there's nothing else that we can do.
That's a great thing to be thankful for. Yvonne Salas, Director of Etiqueta Excellence Manor School in South Florida. Always good to have a little etiquette. Yvonne, thank you so much. And you have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving and holiday and New Year.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Luis, and my best wishes for your audience and for yourself. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And yeah, something to think about. I know that sometimes, you know, family is strange. Family's weird. Family's difficult. But, you know, you got to love them. You don't choose your family, but you got to love them. So I'll leave it at that. That's our program for this Tuesday, November 23rd. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about, well, food, of course. We're going to talk about everything that we can think about with food when it comes to the holidays. We're going to talk with a baker who's got a new cookbook out. She's particularly passionate about flour. Then we're going to take a journey through the years of some of the best food the WLRN newsroom has explored around South Florida, from kosher wine to Haitian to Filipino delights. Oh, we're going to enjoy it. All of that coming up on the show tomorrow. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe. Be good to each other. The program is made possible in part by support from Miami Cancer Institute.
WLRN Public Media.